You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So we're all about to learn the difference between colluding and coordinating. Basically, yesterday, we learned the first hearings into the Russia-Trump campaign connections from James Comey that the president of the United States is basically under an espionage investigation for colluding or coordinating with the Russians. This is going to get really fucking interesting. But you know, we're not going to talk about this, and we're not going to talk about Donald Trump at the top of today's show. This is a sex and relationship advice podcast. And for a lovely and delightful change of pace, you know what we're going to talk about at the top of today's show? We're going to talk about sex. Just to prove that we still can talk about sex. But talking about sex seems to be all some of us are doing about sex anymore. A new study came out a couple of weeks ago that blew up the New York Times and made a lot of headlines, documenting a decline in sexual frequency among American adults, 1989 to 2014. We are having, all of us, less sex now, it seems, than we were a couple of decades ago. From the study, which you can read at the Archives of Sexual Behavior, American adults had sex about 9 fewer times per year in early 2010s compared to the late 1990s in data from the Nationally Representative General Social Survey. This was partially due to the higher percentage of unpartnered individuals. Married people, partnered people tend to have sex more often, but also they found that people with partners were having less sex than they used to. Cue the hand-wringing and finger-pointing at some of the usual suspects. A lot of people who saw the headline were quick to point a finger at pornography, that people weren't having sex because they were jacking it alone in the family room in the middle of the night while their spouse wept quietly in the marital bedroom. But that was not the case. The decline, I'm reading again from the abstract, decline was not linked to increased pornography use. And in fact, when you dig into the data, pornography users, I love that formulation, pornography users, were having more sex than people who did not use pornography. The New York Times, looking at the fact in the data that millennials and Generation Zers, which are the people coming up behind millennials, that they're having sex less often, pin the blame on portable technology and entertainment. Basically, we are all playing Candy Crush and looking at Twitter and watching Netflix late at night in bed instead of, in boredom, I suppose, rolling over, looking at the person next to us and fucking the shit out of them or asking them to fuck the shit out of us. With all our hand-wringing about young people and hookup culture, the study actually found, and I'm quoting here, with age and time period controlled, those born in the 1930s, the silent generation, had sex the most often, whereas those born in the 1990s, millennials and iGen or Generation Z or whatever we're going to fucking call them, had sex the least often. So people who came up with technology are having a lot less sex than people who came up with swing bands in World War II, I suppose. What does it all mean? Debbie Herbenick, Dr. Debbie Herbenick of Indiana University and the Kinsey Institute, had a great op-ed in the Washington Post encouraging people to not emphasize the quantity of sex that we're having, but instead to look for the quality of sex that we're having. She speculated in her piece that Americans may have been consenting previously to sex they did not want to have. Women who didn't think they could say no to their husbands, asexuals who didn't have a word to describe themselves and so lacked the self-conception that would empower them as a community to refuse to have sex they didn't want to be having in the first place. Maybe there are reasons, good reasons, some people are having less sex. She also cites health concerns, diabetes, obesity, not always a problem, obesity, but can be, and the fact that more Americans than ever are surviving cancer, and of course, cancer treatments can leave a person happy to be alive, but less capable of obtaining or sustaining an erection or lubricating, and then less interested in sex generally. And the study didn't ask people about satisfaction. They didn't ask people if they were happy with the amount of sex that they were having or happy with their sex lives or their emotional lives, just using quantity of sex as the metric. And Dr. Herbenick wants us to think more about quality and less about quantity and called for follow-up studies. And I agree. And while I agree with Dr. Herbenick, and you should all go read her terrific op-ed at the Washington Post unpacking this study, people do call in all the time to this here Savage Lovecast complaining about quantity. and quality occasionally, but a lot of calls are people who are unhappy with the amount of sex that they're having and telling them to focus on the quality of the sex they're having when they're not having the quantity they want maybe is going to come as a cold comfort to them. I do note often the same people who complain about quantity complain about intentionality. They don't want to schedule sex. They want it to be spontaneous. They want it to happen, quote unquote, naturally. And this desire for spontaneity, for not scheduling sex, seems to be at war with, I think, technologies. I think the fact that we have so many entertainment options beyond our partner's junk or our own junk these days. And we're going to have to err on the side of some intentionality. We're going to have to err on the side of some scheduling if we are going to defeat our devices. If we're going to turn away from Twitter and turn to Twatter or Butter or whatever your pet name is for your partner's genitalia or preferred Orify, we're going to have to be intentional about it. We're going to have to set the phones down in another room and head to the bedroom and turn the lights off and still be awake and have nothing else to do for a while except each other. So, yeah, I agree with Dr. Herbenik. I often do. I must always do. Quality matters more than quantity. I'd rather have less great sex than tons of shitty sex. Who wouldn't rather have less but great than lots but shitty? That said, quantity matters too, particularly if you're with someone with whom you have great sex. You want to be having more great sex with that person. And if Netflix or Twitter or whatever the current game is, it's not Flying Pigs or Candy Crush anymore, whatever the current game is that's occupying all of your brain cells in the middle of the night or at bedtime, you're going to have to schedule some putting that shit down, schedule some putting that shit away so you can turn to each other instead and ramp up the quantity. Particularly you young people. Old people like to think that young people are horny monsters who are having sex all the time. And this study, well, we're very disappointed in you young people. You're letting us down. You're making it harder for us to live vicariously through you. So put the phone down. Turn the Netflix off. Suck a dick. Eat some pussy. Do each other. Get these numbers up. All right, before we get to today's show, I just want to remind everyone we have a live taping of the Savage Lovecast coming up in Portland, Oregon at Revolution Hall on April 14th. It's going to be our first Easter extravaganza. We've got lots of surprises planned for you. You will want to be there. Go to portlandmercury.com/Easter for tickets. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your questions, tons of my answers, and Brian Whitney, who's the co-author of Raw Deal, a new book he wrote with the infamous New York City Police Department cannibal cop Gil Valley. We have a fascinating conversation about that subject, about sexual fantasies involving cannibalism, and whether people should be tossed in jail for that. That's in the Magnum. And here we go with the micro and your questions. Thanks to Audible.com for supporting the Savage Lovecast. For a free 30-day trial and to support the Savage Lovecast yourself, go to audible.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. Today's episode is brought to you by Stamps.com. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. And right now you can enjoy the stamp service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, click the mic, enter SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about an issue with my dad. He's in his mid-60s, been divorced for 15 years, maybe longer, and recently has started to try and put himself out there again to a disastrous effect. He doesn't make smart decisions around women. And now he had a situation last year where he got himself in a lot of trouble with a relationship, and it required an enormous amount of emotional support from his kids, his adult children, as well as just needing a couch to crash on for a couple of months while it all blew over. Now he is apparently chatting with a Russian male order brides, I guess, is the best way to put it. and planning to visit them in the next week. And I don't know what to do. I don't know how to be supportive without supporting something that is obviously a terrible idea. He's probably not even chatting with women. I mean, it's probably employees of whatever company this is and pictures of women is what I'm guessing, because he's already spent a lot of money on the website. And I don't understand why they would want him to go there. That is very suspicious and scary, as opposed to a woman coming here. Anyway, I don't know what my role is as his adult daughter in supporting him. And I know at some point the kids sort of become the parents, and I don't know how to step into that role, especially in this context, if that's what needs to happen. I want him to be safe and protect himself, but I don't know how to convince him to do that, or how to, I don't know what to do.
Your dad is an adult, or a reasonable facsimile of an adult. If you're not prepared to march into court and attempt to have your dad declared incompetent, incapable of taking care of himself and handling his own finances and making his own decisions and being appointed his guardian, going for guardianship over your dad, I'm not sure what you can do besides yell and scream at him and reason with him. You could contact what's left of the State Department to see if other American citizens have been scammed by this same outfit or with this same ruse, and the State Department might advise your dad not to go. But, you know, there's not much left of the State Department now, so maybe you'd be better off contacting your state attorney general's office to see if they've issued warnings about this particular group or this particular type of scam to seniors in your state. Those are nuclear options, truly nuclear. If I were in your shoes, I would tell myself my dad isn't elderly. I would maybe contact his physician and suggest a mental health checkup for dad, considering these actions, these behaviors. Then have an argument. If his physician declares him mentally competent, have an argument with your dad. Tell him any actual Russian mail order bride who might be interested in the 60-something-year-old American is essentially a sex worker. And you know what? There are sex workers closer to home, and it will be cheaper for him in the long run to hire local. No international, awful international flights, no middle seats in coach, hire local. And he can have a connection. He can find a sex worker nearby and establish a relationship with one, which is commodified, sure, but I'm sorry, a relationship with a Russian mail order bride is also commodified, but they can involve actual affection. Talk to sex workers. When you speak to sex workers about their long-term regular clients, there is true affection and concern that goes both ways in those relationships when they are healthy and functional. And you can say that about any relationship. There should be true concern and empathy and compassion going both ways in all healthy, functional relationships. And it is possible for a sex worker and a regular client to establish a healthy, functional, long-term, commodified relationship / connection. That's what I would be encouraging my dad to do if this were my dad making this mistake. And it is quite obviously a mistake that your dad is about to make.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bi girl living in the Northwest, and I'm calling with a question because I just slept with a taken person for the third time last night, different people each time, and I'm looking for some moral clarity and what's wrong with me. So, and it was super hot and finally turned on my sex drive for the first time in 4 months. So how do I make sure I stop sleeping with people who are taken in the future, though?
I think you should pick up a copy of Daniel Bergner's terrific book, What Do Women Want? Adventures in the Science of Female Desire. It unpacks a lot of what scientists and researchers now know or believe they know about what turns women on, what gets women going. And one of the things, one of the primary things that seems to arouse desire in women is to be desired. Women want to be wanted. They want the power of their attractiveness, their looks, their bodies, their brains, their everything to be so overwhelming that the man that is attracted to them, if it's a heterosexual thing, is just overwhelmed by that desire. They can't control themselves. And I think that's what's at play here with you. I think this is why you are into these people who are taken. You're into being taken by these people who are taken. You're into taking these people who are taken. Because what it says to your perhaps subconscious, if you're not consciously aware of it, what it says to your erotic imagination is, I am so powerfully attractive. I am so desirable that this person who shouldn't is. This person who shouldn't be fucking me is fucking me. Not because they're awful, not because they're a cad, not because they're a cheater, but because I am so irresistibly attractive. And that sense of being wanted so badly that this person will violate their relationship, violate their commitment, they will break this taboo, turns you on. Because you want to be wanted, because that awakens desire in you, their desire, that male person's desire for you, or that female person, if you've been taken by people who are ladies, it gets you going, it makes you wet, turns you on. What do you do about that? Well, I guess you could get involved in organized swinging, but then you're not being taken by someone who shouldn't be taking you. You're being taken by someone who has permission to go get you. So what you're going to have to do if you want to stop being the person who cheats with other people is to find other ways to feel as wanted, to replace this dynamic, this thing that stirs your libido, to be with someone who shouldn't be with you. That's how badly they want to be with you. They shouldn't be with you and they are with you. You have to find something that you can put there in its place. You have to find some other way to be wanted that badly. Maybe you should start taking out personal ads in cities and states that you don't live in and seeing if guys will fly all the way to wherever you are to be with you, because that's how badly they want you. Or you should set up hurdles that guys have to clear before they can get into your pants, or women have to clear before they can get under your skirts. And seeing those people clear those hurdles to get to you will make you feel as wanted. Or maybe this is your thing. And knowing that it's the wrong thing, or a wrong thing, a thing that you shouldn't be doing, you could convince yourself that this is a fantasy that you should explore only through role play. And you should find guys who aren't attached, or find guys who are in open relationship, or women who aren't attached, or women who are in open relationships, and have them dirty talk with you about cheating on their partners or primary partners with you when they're not actually technically cheating. But they can crank you up by pretending they are. Anyway, go get What Do Women Want by Daniel Bergner and read it. I think it'll help you unpick the lock on the safe that is your brains and erotic imagination. Audible has an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and more. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're driving, on the subway or bus, doing chores around the house, or at the gym. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/savage and browse their unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title for free and start listening. It's that easy. One audiobook you may enjoy is 1984, the new classic edition by George Orwell, narrated by Simon Preble. There are about 7,000 different versions of 1984 on Audible, including dramatizations narrated by David Niven and others. Check them out. Pick the one you want read to you or performed for you and get with the 1984 program. 1984 back on the top of bestseller lists everywhere because, well, you know. Once again, for a free 30-day trial, go to audible.com/savage. That's audible.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old male, straight male, living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm calling because I'm having a problem with my father and my stepmom. A few years ago, on a family trip to Miami while I was in college, my stepmom came on to me. She's quite an attractive Latina woman, and I came back from hanging out with some friends, and she was dressed in her dressing gown and had a glass of whiskey in her hand and was cracking open nuts. She proceeded to sit me down and start massaging me quite erotically. She ended up knees down in my lap. I became aroused. She was quite uncomfortable, but at the same time, what, you know, every teenager's dream in some ways, but was quite mortifying in reality. She then laid me down on the couch and started hand feeding me candies, asking me which one I preferred more. And when I replied I liked them both, she asked me if that means I prefer two women at the same time. She then spoke to me in Spanish and put a blanket over me and walked away. I didn't tell anyone in my family about this for years. And recently my father and my stepmom have started getting divorced, and I've shown a lot of animosity towards my stepmom, to my father's dismay, because she's always been very helpful and kind throughout my life. I guess I'm calling because I finally told my dad, and I told my siblings, who advised me to tell him, finally. I did, and his reaction was slightly dismissive, and he tells me, you know, let it go. She didn't know what she was doing. I'm wondering if I should call her out on it. I feel kind of angry about the whole thing and want to speak to her about it. I'm not sure if I should just let bygones be bygones, considering she probably doesn't remember. She does take Ambien, and I'm almost positive she was kind of blacked out on her sleeping medication and a bit of whiskey. It's also a touchy subject because I'm still quite close with her son, who's my stepbrother. Any advice? Thanks, Dan.
So a quick follow-up question. When you talked to your dad, he said sleeping pills, alcohol. And did you know if your stepmom, when you all lived together, did she take Ambien? Was she taking sleeping pills regularly that she shouldn't have been mixing with alcohol?
She was taking sleeping pills, and it was sort of her nightly thing to have like a little glass of whiskey.
And a handful of Ambien?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
And when I came back, she was just so out of it, but really into me.
Yeah, out of it, and behaved toward you in a really inappropriate way, a way that made you feel really uncomfortable. And I think, if I may, you describe her as hot and very, very attractive in a way that probably left you feeling conflicted and torn, because you probably were aroused by this situation, but you felt, you know, you couldn't betray your dad, and the wrongness of it was also banging on the walls as she was touching you and eliciting from you, you know, an arousal response that you didn't wish
100%.
That you didn't want her to elicit, and that you felt shame in the wake of and conflict in the wake of.
Definitely.
Here's the thing. Seems to me that you should say something to your stepmom, and what you're likely to hear from her is, I'm mortified. I don't remember. I'm so sorry. You know, people have, and this is now me talking, not me trying to pretend, not role playing your stepmom talking. People on Ambien, and particularly people who've mixed sleeping pills of any sort in alcohol, have driven cars to the grocery store, have gone to airports and attempted to board airplanes, have initiated sex, have done crazy things during blackouts on sleeping pills. I imagine that that's either what happened or it's what she's going to tell you happened, right?
Yeah.
You know, she's probably unlikely to say, yeah, I wanted to fuck you. Yeah, I would have fucked you. Yeah, I still would fuck you. I don't think that that's what she's going to say. I also think that that's probably not the truth. If I was going to lay odds, I would say there's a 90% chance that this was an Ambien blackout or some sort of really diminished capacity moment for her, that when you bring it up, she's going to be mortified, embarrassed, and she's going to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have some choices to make, right? This obviously traumatized you to some extent, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah, even at one point while she was massaging me, my dad, who also takes Ambien, opened the door of his bedroom.
God.
And I could tell he was messed up. And he just like had this weird glance and then like closed the door like he had heard some noise outside, opened the door, looked at us, and then went right back to bed. But he clearly had no clue what was going on and didn't remember or anything.
Okay. Well, I think it's telling about blood connections, right? That you have exonerated your father completely, but you can't quite exonerate your stepmother here, because your relationship with your biological father is one that you really can't escape. You know, a step parent comes into a family, and you know, if the relationship ends between the biological parent and the step parent, usually that's the ending of the relationship between the biological children and the step parent too. So it's really telling about the kind of emotional calculus that goes on in our heads that your dad may have been equally complicit, and yet you have told yourself a story that gets your dad entirely off the hook, but you haven't told yourself a story that gets your stepmother off the hook.
Yeah.
So my advice would be, because I think you need this to move past, have a conversation with your stepmother. Just say, you know, I just need to get off my chest. And this happened and it just left me feeling really terrible and weird. And it's kind of been a stone in my shoe and I need to get it out. And then she'll hopefully, if she doesn't have a zero emotional IQ, she will apologize. She will express her mortification and probably, and it, obviously I think it'll be true, she will chalk it up to the Ambien and the alcohol. And then you have to decide what you're going to do going forward. Because think of this memory, think of the trauma, the conflict as a plastic garbage bag full of razor blades that you've been hugging to yourself for a long time.
Yeah.
And now right. You have this choice. Are you going to continue to grip this basket of, you know, this bag of razor blades in your arms? Are you going to continue to hold it tight and cut yourself up? Or are you going to put it down and walk away from it and choose the de-escalating narrative that in a way gets your stepmom off the hook, gets your dad off the hook, allows you to continue to have a relationship with your stepmom's son that's important to you?
Yeah.
You know, there's a certain amount of agency when we, you know, we create the narratives, we tell ourselves our stories. And there are times when, you know, when it comes to traumas that we can tell ourselves a story that in this case is probably true. That makes it easier for us to get on with our lives, to get past the trauma, not to deny that it ever took place,
mm-hmm.
but to wander away from it, to back away from it. And it seems to me that that's what you should do, because that's in your own self-interest, because your own, you know, from your own stated desire to have and maintain the relationship with your stepbrother, to maintain a good relationship with your dad, which you've already done by telling yourself a version of the story that exonerates your dad.
Mm-hmm.
So all you're doing now is expanding that version of the story to include your stepmom. After you have the accountability moment for your stepmom and with your stepmom, where you say, this happened, I've been carrying it around for a long time, I got to get it off my chest, I would like an apology and an explanation. And then we never have to talk about it again and we can bury it together, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because I'd really like to bury it, because I'm super close with my dad, and I could tell that when I told him about it, he seemed like a little hurt that his wife was capable of doing something like this, but he also kind of chalked it up to, oh, you know, she didn't know what she was doing, and you should just let it go, and it's not a big deal.
Did you tell your dad, when you talked to your dad about it, did you tell your dad about him walking in on it, or did you not say anything?
No, and when I confronted my dad, it was with my sister, and she kind of brought it out because I was really nervous. And he said he was curious about what happened. And as I started to talk about some of the details, my sister kind of gave me a little kick under the table. Like, don't tell him exactly what happened. Keep it simple. He doesn't need to hear that stuff. It's hurtful. So he doesn't really know the specifics of what actually happened.
Okay, well, this is just more evidence of what I said earlier, that you have the biological children circling the wagons because the relationship with the biological parent is one that you can't escape ever. And so you're all choosing the de-escalating option there, the de-escalating narrative, including holding back details from your father that I think you should have shared with him.
Yeah.
And you can do the same with your stepmother. Not hold back details, not let anybody off any hooks, but choose the de-escalating narrative and choose forgiveness and grace after the apology that you clearly need and clearly deserve is offered to you.
Right. Okay.
That would be my advice.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck. But don't, you know, you've been gripping the bag of razor blades for a long time. Get it all out and then walk away from that bag of razor blades. Set it the fuck down.
All right. Will do. Thank you so much, Dan.
Stamps.com can save you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. Stamps.com also save you grief. You don't have to go to the post office because that is a griefy place. Mail any letter or package using just your computer and printer, and the mail carrier picks it up at your home. Avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You can create your stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. And right now, you too can enjoy the stamps service with a special offer that includes a four-week trial, plus postage, and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in my code, SAVAGE. That's Stamps.com, enter SAVAGE. Stamps.com. Never, ever, ever go to the post office again.
Hi, Dan. Late 20s, married couple, been married for about a year, having a debate right now on the way home from work, sitting in traffic. This morning, my wife and I were having sex, and you're getting a little frisky, so I decided to stick a dildo inside of her and then have her blow me while I use the toy on her. This afternoon, driving home, having a conversation about that, she seemed to think that that is kinky play because it happened before work. But if we had done that after dinner tonight, that would have just been our normal kind of vanilla sex, or like the bar for vanilla sex. And I was saying that I don't believe you can have a sexual act be kinky during one part of the day or prior to or after a certain act or event, and then have it be vanilla a different part of the day. She's sticking to her gun, but I'm sticking to mine, and I'm curious as to your opinion on the matter.
One man's roll of duct tape is another man's sex toy, which is to say that kink is really subjective. So you can both be right. Your wife can be right, and you can be right. For her, the fact that you did this dildo and blowjob play early in the morning, it felt naughtier early in the day for her, and therefore it felt kinky to her. And for you, time of day is irrelevant when you're weighing something on the kink to the vanilla spectrum scale, whatever. So you're both right. It was kinky for her because time of day, wasn't kinky for you because that's vanilla sex for you guys. A lot of people out there would regard using a sex toy, using a dildo on someone while they blew you, as itself inherently kinky whenever and wherever it happened. But you don't have to agree. You can agree to disagree. Your wife is entitled to her opinion, her subjective opinion about her own experiences, about what is or isn't experienced by her as kinky, and you are entitled to your own as well. So my advice, my ruling, is for you two to stop debating this and to let yourselves, as a newly married couple, have a difference of opinion without having to hammer each other into agreement on this, because you know what? There's going to be a lot of things that you are not going to agree about over the course of your marriage. And sometimes the best hack is to agree to disagree rather than regard yourself as one brain that has to come to some sort of consensus on absolutely everything, because that will make you A, crazy, and B, ultimately divorced. You don't need to spend a fortune to get the rest you need. Great sleep starts with the right sheets, and they're more affordable than you think with Boll and Branch. What makes them unique is each sheet is crafted from 100% organic cotton. That means Boll and Branch sheets not only feel incredible, they also look amazing. And since Boll and Branch sells exclusively online, you don't pay that expensive retail markup. That's half the price for twice the quality. You will love these sheets. Try them for 30 nights and see for yourself. If you're not impressed, return them for a full refund. Anyone who sleeps on Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. Go to BollandBranch.com today, and you'll get $50 off your first set of sheets, plus free shipping, when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's $50 off, plus free shipping right now at BollandBranch.com. Spelled B-O-L-L and Branch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I am a straight, early 20s female on the West Coast. I've been with my boyfriend for about 9 months, but in the past few months, we've been having an issue with tearing. My partner is uncircumcised, and his foreskin gets small tears in it. We're in a monogamous relationship and have sex without condoms. We've tried to increase lubrication, whether it's making sure I'm fully aroused or a partial blowjob, but the tears seem to come right back. We've tried taking some time off to let him heal, but nothing seems to do the trick. Do you have any suggestions? Thanks.
Men and boys who can't fully retract their foreskins have a condition called phimosis, a tight foreskin. And this can be painful, and it can, in some cases, be dangerous. It can make sex awkward and unpleasant, and again, painful. But there are treatments, including getting circumcised, but also the application of a steroid ointment to the foreskin to help it soften and loosen and expand. And I think your boyfriend should go talk to his doctor and tell him that he has this problem around ripping of his foreskin, even if you're using a lot of lube, and this may be a help to him. I think your boyfriend should go talk to his doctor about this problem, and I would recommend, and I am not a doctor and I am not his doctor. His doctor may have a different recommendation, but it seems to me that a little more slack in his foreskin, a little more suppleness, a little looser foreskin might help solve this problem. So this steroid ointment that is prescribed to people with phimosis could possibly help your boyfriend solve this problem. If it doesn't solve the problem, you're just going to have to fuck more gently, use more lube, and the occasional rip or tear may be the price of admission that your boyfriend has to pay for the orgasms that your boyfriend enjoys. And when he's ripped, when there's a little uncomfortable tearing, then you can lay off his dick for a while and he can eat your pussy until his dick is back in action.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old cisgendered gay male calling from Copenhagen, Denmark. I'm calling because last week me and my boyfriend broke up. We've been together 4.5 years, and I found out that most of the time he had been cheating on me with at least 8 different men, 4 of them being my closest friends. 2 of them he had a sexual relationship for 2 years with them. Well, I think he might be a nymphomaniac. I didn't suspect anything. He's been lying for pretty much throughout our whole relationship. And so have my friends, and I don't know if I should tell his parents about what truly happened. They of course know that we broke up. They're very kind and very warm, but I still love him very much, and I really want him to also get help if he needs that. He says that he's very sad about what happened, and he did it for the excitement. But if he's ever going to see a shrink, he'll need the push from his parents, because he wouldn't be able to afford a shrink without support from his parents. And also, I want to know, if he gets a boyfriend in the future, should I tell that boyfriend what happened between me and him?
You need and deserve a better boyfriend. Sounds like you also need and deserve and hopefully are out there finding some better friends. If your boyfriend was cheating on you with all of your friends, including having multi-year affairs behind your back with your friends, it wasn't just your boyfriend who betrayed you. Now, pivoting to your questions, I think you should leave his parents out of it. It's only been a week. You broke up a week ago. And it seems to me that you're doing a really good job of concealing what has to be some anger. You must be angry and upset about this 4.5 years worth of betrayals that he meted out to you, including betraying you with your close friends. And yet you're presenting all of this to me. You're rolling out your problem to me, not as one of anger, but of concern for him. And yet all of your solutions seem to involve some form of retribution in the drag of concern and compassion. I want to go tell his parents on him. I want to go tell his kind and lovely parents what a cheating shitbag their son is, so that they know I'm the victim here in this breakup, and so that they can offer him some money to go see a shrink in case he needs to see a shrink. And what if he gets a boyfriend? Out of love and compassion and concern for this stranger, this boyfriend that I do not know and I have never met, should I go and tell the boyfriend, to be named later, to be determined, that my ex, their current, is a cheater, a lying sack of shit who betrayed me in these scalding ways? Your boyfriend may or may not need help. Your boyfriend just may need to accept that this is who he is. Your boyfriend may go to a shrink, and if he gets a sex positive shrink, who's not going to shame him, will say that the mistake he made was not the amount of sex he wanted to have with the amount of people that he wanted to have sex with. The mistake he made was entering into a monogamous commitment that he is incapable of keeping. That if he wants to have many, many sex partners, particularly as a gay man, it's not difficult to find a partner who is down with an open relationship, who isn't going to demand exclusive sexual commitment from him, a commitment that he should now know, after shitting the bed in his last relationship with you, that he's incapable of keeping. As for future boyfriends, Denmark is a small country. Copenhagen is a lovely town, and the gay community there I visited is tightly knit. Everyone seemed to know everyone else. I don't think that you go and pull his boyfriend aside if he gets another boyfriend to warn him. That said, you have a right to your experience, and you have a right to tell your truths. Rushing out to tell his boyfriend what you know or what he did to you, an asshole move. But if you're interacting socially with someone that he's dating and they ask you why your relationship ended, I think you have an absolute right to tell your truth. The relationship ended because he cheated on me, and cheated on me in really painful ways with people I thought were my friends. That's why the relationship ended. You also might want to have a conversation while the wound is still fresh, while you and your boyfriend may still be processing the end of your relationship, still swapping whatever books and clothes or personal items you had in each other's apartments. You might want to say to him, don't make monogamous commitments. Know yourself. And what you should know about yourself now is that you can't do what you told me we were doing. So don't do that thing. Don't lie to people the way you lied to me. And there's no need to lie to people the way you lied to me. I want a monogamous commitment from the person that I'm with. And there are gay men out there who can make monogamous commitments and keep them. But there are plenty of gay men out there that want commitments without monogamy. And you owe it to yourself. You owe it to karma. And you owe it to anyone you date in the future to make sure that you're on the same page on this subject. Because what you've done was shitty and uncalled for and unnecessary. So don't be a shitty person going forward.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 52-year-old straight female, although recently learning to explore the female body, living in Southern California. I recently got out of an unhappy 25-year marriage. For the last 3 years of our marriage, I had been having an affair with a man. My ex-husband knew about it. I ended our marriage when I told our kids what I had been doing so that my ex couldn't use it against me anymore. My youngest, my daughter, was horribly upset, and we have had many ups and downs since then. In hindsight, I realized that I traumatized her needlessly and have apologized to her many times. My problem is this. I still have a relationship with the man that I had an affair with, and we have only gotten closer. We recently began a polyamorous relationship with his wife, which is working out better than I ever imagined possible. My daughter is graduating from college this June and intends to move back home with me. She knows I still see him, but refuses to even let me talk to him when she's in the house. I don't expect her to approve or even agree to meet him, but I need to set some boundaries with her without completely alienating her from my life. After many years of living an unhappy and unfulfilled life, I want the freedom to explore this new phase of my life. I don't know if I should continue to be honest and say that this is now involved into a polyamorous relationship or keep that to myself. Dan, please help me figure out how to have the adult life that I want and need to explore without hurting my daughter.
So let me see if I got this straight. Your adult daughter is graduating from college and is moving home to live with you. I assume either rent-free or subsidized to probably a great extent. And she thinks she has a right to dictate to you, her adult parent who is housing her, who you may or may not speak to, who you may or may not hang out with, suck the dick of, mess around with the wife of. No, bullshit. Yeah, you need to establish some boundaries. You need to establish those boundaries fast. I don't doubt that you've done a lot of apologizing to your daughter. Now it's time to do some standing up to your daughter. One last conversation, one last acknowledgement of the pain that you caused her. Yes, you had an affair. Adult relationships, particularly 25-year marriages, are long and messy and complicated things, and sometimes they end, and sometimes they don't end neatly and cleanly. Sometimes there are overlapping relationships or dynamics. And in this instance, although your daughter is involved because she is your kid and was swept up in it, and of course, as a child divorced myself, I understand how it must have impacted her. It has reached the none of her fucking business stage. It has reached the stage where you are allowed to go on with your life and you don't have to be in this defensive, cringing, apologetic crouch for the rest of your life as you interact with your daughter. So you tell her that she is welcome to move home. She needs to know you are still in relationship with the man that you were seeing when you were cheating on her father, and that was suboptimal. You should have ended the marriage and then gone and found someone else. But this is the way a lot of people get out of their marriages, their relationships. They meet somebody else. Shit happens. It incentivizes bringing about an end that needed to come anyway, and that's how it ends. And it's a little messy, but it is not uncommon. And just tell her everything, that he's married to someone else and the three of you are kind of doing a poly thing, which is not unfucking heard of these days. Basically, you need to come out to your adult daughter, and not just come out to her, stand up to her. You are done apologizing for this adult mess that impacted her emotionally, yes, but it's not her affair ultimately. And you are an adult, and you are free to enter into relationships of whatever structure or model that you choose. And you will not judge her for the relationships she chooses to initiate or enter into, or however they might end. And you will not be judged by her. And you will certainly not subsidize her. You will certainly not pay her rent and cover her food and utilities so that she can glower at you and dictate to you who you may or may not hang out with. So, yeah, you left a callback number, but you know who I'd really like to get on the phone? I'd really like to get your daughter on the phone. If she's not a listener, maybe you should turn her on to the show. And if she hears this call, if she hears your call, maybe you should send her the link to this particular show, and she would like to have a conversation with me, child of divorce to child of divorce, about this situation. I would be happy to talk with her.
This message is for the woman in episode 542 who called about the guy who burned her with a cigarette and proceeded to tell her how much he hates women. And she felt guilty about possibly walking away. I think that you guys are right to tell her to leave him alone. But I also want to say that as women, we may go into a situation thinking that, you know, oh my gosh, this poor guy needs help. But actually, he sounds malicious. He sounds manipulative. And it sounds like that's exactly what he wanted from you, was to feel guilty enough to stay. I don't think that he needs your help or that he wants your help. I think that his desire was to make you feel fucked up. And recognize that and stay away. You have no obligation to him or to anybody else. For any other woman that feels guilted into staying with a man, befriending a man, trying to love him enough to change him, or to try and be that example to all womanhood, not your responsibility. He can get his own shit together.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. This is in response to your advice to the caller in episode 542, the guy who didn't put a condom on when she asked if he would like to please put a condom on. I think your advice was right, and also, you know, your point about women being socialized to ask questions rather than to say what they want is also good. On the flip side of that, men, if a woman asks you a question about something that sort of sounds like maybe it's a leading question, that she's trying to tell you what she wants, that she's phrasing in the form of a question, listen the fuck up to that. Understand that she may not feel comfortable telling you what she wants. She may feel like she has to phrase what she wants in the form of a question, and you need to also respect that. And we want to move toward the world where everyone feels comfortable saying what they want. But in the meanwhile, guys on the side, on the powerful side of this power gap, need to listen to what women on the other side are saying.
I just listened to episode 542, where a caller moved from King County to a more conservative area and is in need of support. I also recently moved from a progressive area to a conservative town and completely understand what he is going through. My advice for you would be to stop freely talking about your political and social stances at work. Do not engage. The people who are upsetting you are feeding off your reactions and will not easily be swayed with kind and considerate conversation. Remove negative people and all coworkers from your social media accounts and keep a strict separation between your work life and your personal life. Be kind and professional, but firm on this boundary, as it will be tested on a regular basis. Also, find your tribe. Like Dan said, there are progressives in your area. They are most likely keeping to themselves, but do what you can to find them. While you are finding them, you will also find organizations that are in need of your compassion and help. This will be your progressive outlet and your haven. Until then, call your old friends on a regular basis for some normality. My last bit of advice for living in a conservative town is to go onto the casual encounters area on Craigslist and pursue the listings. Not for finding someone, but to see the vast number of listings out there. Chances are many are written by the blowhard conservatives in your area looking for strange on the down low. The absurdities of some of these posts and my laughter was a great equalizer for me during a time when I felt lost and trapped in this area. Good luck and stay strong.
Before we leave it there, I want to remind everyone we're having a live taping of the Savage Lovecast, a live stage extravaganza in Portland at the Revolution Hall on April 14th. Go to portlandmercury.com/Easter for tickets. I'm going to be there. Singer-songwriter Rachel Lark is going to be there. Stand-up comedian Noriko Ott is going to be there. Jesus is going to be there and more. April 14th, Good Friday, Portland, Oregon, portlandmercury.com/Easter. Four tickets. All right, that's where we're going to leave it. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast, and we will see you in Portland on April 14th.